this week's WFAE Talks, State House Politics.
This budget proposal has already been shared with top budget legislators in both the House and the Senate, and therefore nothing in our budget should come as a surprise.
Maybe, but that doesn't mean it's being embraced.
I hope our legislators realize that teachers have choices too. We have options.
That's right.
Their names are Virginia, Tennessee, South Carolina, and the private sector.
And we'll also discuss domestic violence charges filed against Panthers defensive end Greg Hardy. And we, being yours truly, News Director Greg Collard, and also reporter Ben Bradford.
Hello there.
And Lisa Miller.
Hello.
So, big week at the State House, which we did our best to cover from Charlotte.
Yeah. Listening to some audio, lots of audio online, and watching some videos streaming on the website, so... Yes.
There are some cuts being made to higher education. Let's just get into it, Lisa. Tell us about these higher ed cuts.
Yeah. So it would be 2% of the UNC system's budget, which equates to about $46, $49 million. And there's 11 schools that it would include, including UNC Charlotte. And basically, McCrory has said, you know, this is part of the proposal. Hey, these would be flex cuts, so they can't impact financial aid, but you can cut anywhere else. Now, he does say, you know, it shouldn't be in instruction, it shouldn't be in this and this. But then you had Tom Ross, UNC system president, follow up on that pretty quickly and say it's not going to be possible to do that without impacting instruction, and it'll be hard to continue to get very good faculty member at our school on this budget. He said, hey, this is $1,000. We're getting $1,000 less than we got 2008 per student. So that's really the big cut in the governor's budget at the higher ed level.
When we haven't heard from any of the individual schools, they're really kind of diverting everything, or making sure all comment comes from the central office.
Exactly. And, you know, with the governor's proposal, we found this, a lot of groups are really so willing to comment on this. For example, one of the big cuts is coming from the Department of Health and Human Services budget. And, you know, it's not, I guess, technically a cut from the how you look at it, in that it doesn't cut a program, but basically it shifts costs onto Medicaid costs, onto hospitals and mental health associations. So those groups are not willing to speak up at this point. I mean, I think kind of the general thought between schools, between other groups impacted by this budget, is that, hey, this is still just the governor's budget. It's going to change a lot. You know, let's kind of keep things on the down low for a while until there's more debate.
Yeah, and a quick recap of just what, you know, of exactly what you said, just what that document is it's essentially the governor lays out his blueprint for what he'd like to see. But
exactly.
Of course, you know, in our system in the state, and of course, the same thing works. It works the same way on the federal level, which is that all appropriations have to go through the General Assembly. So there's a whole process of...
Sure. And all these cuts would take place in different members' districts, and they don't always want cuts in their own districts.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's always a good – it always becomes the starting point. I mean, the budget becomes the starting point. But, you know, if you look on the federal – obviously, there's less daylight between what the Republican governor of North Carolina wants and the Republican-dominated legislature wants, but there'll still be some differences there. But, you know, if you think about it on the federal level, for instance, right, I mean, President Obama proposes a budget every year, and every year the things that he proposes in that budget do not come to pass.
Right. And he knows they won't. Some things won't
right.
come to
yeah,
pass
exactly.
even though he puts it in.
It's also a way of setting out your priorities and your agenda and sort of driving the conversation that you want to drive. So I think that's sort of the point of it as well, is it's as much about trying to set your priorities as it is about how is the money actually going to be spent.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, when you look at the issue of teacher pay, for example, back in February, the governor announced that he wanted to raise the pay of teachers in their first 9 years on the job, basically. And when he made that announcement, you know, he had the legislative leaders right there with him saying, hey, we agree with this, we're going to do this. And, you know, when he made it last week, they were not there. And when the proposals came out, this week, you know, there was kind of a, oh, okay, it seems like it's a good starting point, and we're going to review it now. So, I mean, this thing could change a lot. It was kind of, you know, tepid praise you were hearing at that point. So even though, you know, it's a Republican-dominated legislature and the governor is Republican, does not mean they necessarily agree on everything when it comes to spending money. Right. So
I think one of the more interesting, I predict anyway, battles will be over the governor's proposed cutting $22 million from these centers on different campuses that his administration deems are not central to getting a degree, although that's something that's certainly in the eye of the beholder. And a lot of colleges have these centers. At UNC Charlotte, it's the Urban Institute would be one.
Would be one of several, yeah.
And the Center for, what is it, the philanthropy?
Social capital.
Or social capital.
Is one.
Yeah,
there's a research institute. So,
and all colleges have these, or something
a lot
like
of them,
that.
Yeah.
A
mm-hmm.
lot of them. And,
right,
and I think it's going to be one of those. I think there's going to be a big battle, and everyone will, I think, be making their case of why these are so important to the campus.
And right. That really gets at sort of the heart of, you know, asking yourself, what is a university for? And, you know, there's going to be a lot of disagreement with this. The thing that the governor had in his budget was that basically, you know, these are centers that the ones that should get cut are the ones that aren't involved in degree production or aren't central to the mission of a university. But, you know, for example, I'm sure the UNC system thinks very differently about some of these centers, would not put it in the same words.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's and when you're talking about hiring faculty as well, you know, a lot of times you look and the way that you draw particularly top level research faculty is because you say, all right, well, you know, you're going to come in, you're going to teach a couple of classes, but then you get to really focus on your research and this can be a house for your research.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I mean, you know, talking about what universities are for, there are two things that we've pushed together, and I don't think we always think about that necessarily, that they are two different things, and we've pushed them together, but they're both purposes of universities.
And there,
exactly.
And there's different arguments to be made, and, you know, you could certainly argue that, hey, what this center does not have anything to do with the education that my child is receiving, so why should we fund that? But on the other hand, there are some cases where these centers also enhance or the reputation of the university and make that degree more valuable is another argument.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. And you know, I think universities would also say, you know, maybe those, you know, some of these different fields don't have a lot of students in them, but they're furthering knowledge.
Sure. I mean, it's so interesting. This is a tangent, but hey, why not? It's a podcast. I'm working on this story about looking at these new climate change reports and what the state's doing and mm-hmm. some of the responses and so forth. And as I've been doing that, I've been calling around, you know, trying to find experts to talk to me about this. And I have talked to, I mean, just today, for instance, there's the Climate Change Hub, which is a USDA-sponsored thing coming out of NC State. They also have the Southeast Regional Climate Center. There's a mm-hmm. Duke University one. There's an NC State one. There's a UNC one. A&T has something. University of Florida, I was talking to them earlier today. They have the you know, Southeast Climate Consortium. There's a center at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. And then down in Virginia, there's you know, Pew Research, which is not university related, so a little bit of tangent. But, you know, there's all these little ones that you don't necessarily think about, you know, that I didn't think about, you know, just that. I mean, there's a ton of them. It was surprising to me as I was calling around for something that's, I mean, obviously is a big issue, but also, in particular, the issues that I'm looking at are a little more niche, a little more mm-hmm. niche. You can use whichever one of those you
these
want.
These are research-based, what are commonly called research-based institutions.
Yeah, exactly.
But some of them are sort of like multidisciplinary, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, that
absolutely.
You are,
and some of them,
you know,
you're talking about one person or two people and they do it 50% of the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, they do whatever. But it just is interesting. I mean, just how many of these things that we have. And yeah, it's absolutely, you look at, for instance, the National Climate Assessment, which is the big climate report that just came out, and you look at what it is that they're referring to. You look at the footnotes in that, and they're looking to research from these places when they're making, you know, when it's describing what it's describing.
Hmm.
Well, that's a tangent. I apologize.
I don't think it's a tangent. I think of it more as an observation.
Thank you.
A relevant observation.
As opposed to my usually irrelevant observations.
So, Lisa, is this teacher pay raise going to go through, or is this teacher's going to accept it because it's better nothing than keep fighting? I mean, what's?
Well, I have to admit, you know, when three weeks ago, I thought the idea of across the board teacher pay raise, that there was almost no chance that it was going to happen. But I think there is definitely momentum for it. And I lawmakers are really concerned about the budget numbers. They don't necessarily agree with the governor's assessment of where we are. We're having
He would just heard him say nothing should come as a surprise.
Well, yes, things have come as a surprise. Maybe if he met with them a day before or whatever. But yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely a chance. You know, there's a much better chance than I thought 3 weeks ago. So, Tillis seems probably a little bit more optimistic about teacher pay raises than Berger, but it'll be interesting to see where people fall on this.
Okay. Anything else, Ben?
Yeah, there's some energy stuff. Energy in the budget. Stuff.
They have added 19 on the environmental beat. They are adding 19 inspectors to the State Department.
This was something that,
Of Natural Resources.
The Department of Environment and Natural Resources, okay. To Diener. Yeah, absolutely. And so there are a couple of line items in the budget specifically addressing coal ash. One is for equipment to help Diener with its sort of assessments of coal ash going forward. And then there are these 19 positions that are being created, which McCrory had, when he announced his plan for how to deal with coal ash, and there's a bill that the legislature needs to introduce and has introduced this week. It was they claimed it was the first bill introduced into the Senate in the General Assembly. But aside from that, yes, they're also adding 19 positions to the Department of Environment and Natural Resources. It's probably important to give some context here, which is that there's been more than 250 positions lost, either ones that were not filled at the time or layoffs or people transferred to other duties or whatever. This is over the past 5 years or so. So, ultimately the 19 positions, I'm sure it's nice. I'm sure it'll be helpful. It's sort of a drop in the bucket.
Mm-hmm. Well, on to another story we covered a lot. Panthers defensive end Greg Hardy, domestic violence charges, allegations against him. He's charged with misdemeanor assault, communicating threats. His girlfriend accused him of beating her up and doing a lot of things and throwing her on guns. Very domestic violence complaint. Was pretty explicit on some things and disturbing to read. And then
story made me wince when I heard it on the radio. I mean, just describing
what
that
happened.
Yeah.
Well,
sure. And those 911 calls, which you sample from there. I mean,
Greg Hardy's 911 calls and a neighbor's 911 call.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing more, I feel like, visceral, like a lot of time. I mean, well, there are, but, hearing 911 calls is always, something,
his 911 calls, I think certainly gave differing accounts of what happened, I guess, is a better way
right.
to put it.
Yeah, I think that's right. And there's a process to these things, too, which I think, you see play out one at a time because, our job is, all media, you report what happens, you have your breaking news part, which is, Greg Hardy arrested on domestic violence charge. And then you have the complaint come out, which has the allegations against him. And then the 911 calls come out, and of course, he's made one of the 911 calls, so he's presenting a different argument, and so just as you see these things develop, it gets more complicated, and we don't know at this point what exactly what is what's happened.
He's saying that basically she was keeping him from leaving, and that he wanted her to leave, and she refused to. We don't know what happened before those calls were made. I mean, we just don't. But it was. Yeah, it's tricky. It's an uncomfortable feeling. I know what you mean to kind of go through those, read that stuff, and then to hear it. And I don't know what else.
It's just part of the job. You just need to do it. Then you got to remember, then the neighbor called, and or not the neighbor. I'm sorry. Someone called from a neighbor's phone and seems to confirm Nicole Holder, which is Greg Hardy's girlfriend and who the alleged victim. She calls and very much corroborates that position. But then the neighbor is there and sort of
says that she's kind of drunk and everything.
She's drunk and says that, you know, at first she said she saw it, now she says she heard it, and that there's, you know, conflicting things. So I mean, it's a mess.
It's
sort of your classic mess. I think as we all know that, you know, domestic violence cases and domestic violence is an issue. It's a mess.
And then the emergency protective order was not granted the next day because she did not show up in court.
Right. So that means the breakdown. What that means? There's no restraining order against Greg Hardy right now.
Right.
Right. Now he does have a couple things that he has to do.
Yes, and that's something we're wondering about. He was ordered he can't communicate with her as a condition of his bond, and then also he has to attend Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, a few of those, and this is something that we really haven't followed up on. We're had some discussion in our news meeting about whether a judge can.
Well, the judge. I think we determined our reporter Tasneem Shama. She checked in with the courts, and I mean, you know, they can. The judge can set conditions on bail, but we were wondering how common this is. I mean, if the idea was that they were both intoxicated, mm-hmm. I mean, how often does that happen? That, you know, in
I'd never heard of it in a case like this. Yeah,
yeah. I don't know.
Lisa, you're being kind of quiet on this. I mean,
I guess so. You know, when you were talking it through, you know, I think it's interesting. I guess it hit me with the restraining order. That, I mean, I understand why someone would have to show up in court, I guess, to get that. But in some way, you know, you got to have an argument.
You're still there in front of him.
But
yeah.
you're there in front of him. It seems like, you know, it's kind of a rough situation.
Well, I guess you have to testify, and the judge has to assess whether your allegations have credibility under questioning. I'm guessing, or have some.
We're speculating. Wildly.
We're speculating. I'm not. That's
Wonderful.
Not. That's not.
We are not legal.
No, I don't think we're speculating. I think we're. That's just what the job of the judge is to do, and that's why she's required to. It's not a judgment on whether or not they are credible.
Yeah, I mean, I'm you know, not. I'm not saying anything about this case, but I mean, I can see where that would put off a victim from showing mm-hmm. up. I mean, you know, that's a tough thing to do. Mm-hmm.
Well, guys, that was a quick WFAE Talks this week.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for keeping it short.
Thanks for keeping it short. is that a weekly request now?
No, not at all. I just feel like sometimes we can be more. I feel like we were efficient.
We were efficient. Okay. Yeah. All right, guys. Have a good week.
All right.
Yep.